This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
And a warm welcome to the Business Bunker Extra with me, Jules Serkin. It's the show where we catch up with all that extra news that we couldn't quite cram into the Business Bunker, which is every Tuesday, as you know. As always, you can tweet us and we'll hear you at VanillaWeb and at Jules Serkin. That's with two S's, Jules and Serkin. Use the hashtag BBunker and we'll hear you and give us all your news, what's going on. We want to know how you're doing. And joining me today, we've got Mark Lumsden-Taylor. He is the founder of the Rural Policy Group, and they've been hosting some events which caught my attention, listener. Very interesting. As you know, I'm a woman that loves Kentish food, and they've been hosting events on the impact of Brexit and also talking about food poverty with some really influential speakers. So they've had speakers, for example, from the NFU, that's the National Federation of Farmers, the House of Commons, and Forays, which is the UK's number one fruit processor and Bramley apple grower in Kent. Now, if you're listening abroad and you're not sure what a Bramley apple is, they are a beautiful big apple that goes into many crumbles and pies, and they're quite unique. With flavour, and we've got some of the most beautiful Kentish apples here in Kent. So welcome, Mark. We've had a few meetings. I was just thinking about when I last saw you, and I believe it was at the Kent County Show, and I was sitting on a hay bale, and I had a flagon of Kentish cider to share. So it was a few years back.
That might have been when I had to be in a omelette competition about who can make the fastest omelette, which I won.
Yes,
that was all highly entertaining with some chefs and so forth. But they dragged me up there as a director of the society, and I had to compete, but did all right, did win.
Excellent. I'm really interested in this, and of course it's in all our hearts at the moment with Brexit. We've all seen the lorry queues. We're hearing about shortages in supermarkets and shops. We've got glass shortages apparently for blood tests now, so it's getting quite scary, not just in the food industry, but let's talk about who the Rural Policy Group is and why you chose this as a passion, Mark.
Well, I've been involved in rural since I moved into Kent in 2003 when we dealt with Hadlow and turned that round. And rural kind of has got into my DNA and my blood. And arguably, they say I knew about it. You could write on a postage stamp. Arguably, they still say that today. However, we have learnt a lot over the last, 15 to 18 years, I suppose, now.
Yeah.
And we all need to eat, ultimately. And I think often we misunderstand or misalign or misrepresent how important agriculture, food and farming is to us as a nation, but also as well that whether it's the farmers or indeed the wider business and industries that work within the rural sector, and I include food in that, we are custodians of it. We are custodians of the land and the sector, and the land is maintained. It doesn't happen by magic. So, and I guess, and finally, we all need to eat. This food needs to come from somewhere. And it's one of the key priorities of the new report that's been released that I'll talk about later from the RPG. So I've always been involved in agri-food and farming in one form or another, obviously providing thousands and thousands of students to the industries, whether that's equestrian food, farming, animal management, landscape design and so forth.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, also being acting as a champion to drive forward the importance of the value of the rural sector.
Yeah.
Both in economic terms and both in socio-economic terms. So when I stepped down from the college in 2019, we took the decision to build on the work that we'd done with Rural PLC and a Rural Advocacy Group that was there to lobby and promote the importance of basically the rural sector in Kent, and created the Rural Policy Group, which is overseen by a council of volunteers. We're all volunteers on this. No one gets paid. And they represent the highest level of expertise in the sectors. And that ranges from some of the people that you've just mentioned. So we have political representation on there at local level, right the way through to the Bank of England and some national and international think tanks who have also got their agriculture and rural, if you like, professors. And that adds a different dynamic to it as well, through to worshipful companies, etc. So we have a whole range of people on there, about 20 people represent the council. And they advise the two basically people that drive it, which is myself and the vice chair, a lady called Sarah Calcutt, who is chair of the National Fruit Show and a non-executive director in New Covent Garden. And she eats, sleeps, breathes the sector, sixth generation farmer and passionate about all things rural. And we decided that the group should be there to have two really simple principal aims. One is to target and promote the importance of self-sufficiency in the UK of 70% by 2030, which we don't think is unrealistic.
Yeah.
And to champion a fair price and fair value distribution in the food supply chain. And that is to do with the upstream and the downstream of the way in which control of pricing is maintained. There are two priorities underpinned by a sustainable and financial approach to the sector. Because if we don't address sustainability, and we were talking about environmental social governance long before it became fashionable.
Yeah.
If that is not embedded within business practice and in sound, if you like, structures within the rural sector, it won't be where it needs to be in the next 10 years.
Where are you on? Because I've been talking with our Westgate quite a bit, who are based in Thanet. That's a Twitter handle, our Westgate. And we've been pretty horrified by the amount of farmland that is being built on with this build better government incentive at the moment. And we are losing prime farmland. I was also really distressed, one of many thousands of people that fought against the Graveney solar farm or solar plant or solar factory, whichever you want to call it, which has been given the go-ahead and building solar farms over a whole swathe by the swale over there in Graveney, which is just about near Faversham. It's a huge, huge plant. But, you know, it's destroying wildlife, it's destroying eco-culture. And I'm a believer that solar panels should go on existing buildings, schools, factories, farms, houses, and it's not going on new builds either. So how involved are you in actually keeping our prime farmland?
So the priorities of the rural policy group are, so break them down a little bit. So self-sufficiency on food and, well, self-sufficiency aimed by 70% by 2030. Right. And with that means that we need to be more efficient. We need to maximise the use of our farmland. And in recent government policy proposals about incentivising environmentalism and conservation, and there is also a incentive programme for the retirement of older farmers, does kind of flow counterintuitively to self-sustainability. So our role is to lobby and to push hard into government, say, look, there's got to be a joined up thinking approach here, because it's not necessarily the fact that we need to turn more land back over to farming, but we need to look at the efficiencies and the way in which farmland is used. And that brings in the sustainability angle about how effective we are with the investment, machinery, the technological development and the labour force to manage this. And I won't go into a huge amount of detail about the current huge labour challenges we are facing.
It's another show, Mark.
It's a whole nother show. And I can talk at debate, a huge debate over the impact of leaving the European Union versus the shortages due to COVID, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and furlough. But that's part of the case and part of the discussion that we've had. And it's about having a proper conversation, because yes, farmland needs to be managed and used effectively. At the same time, it's how much it returns. Because if farmland is managed effectively, it means that you're likely to get more of a return on it. versus farmland that is not necessarily managed or just turned over to wildlife and conservation. So there's got to be a balance and there's got to be a fair distribution. But at the same time, as with anything, change creates three things: paradox, conflict, and uncertainty. And because there is a disjoint between what is ultimately our target on food self-sufficiency, in my time, it's moved from it's not a priority, we all need to import, versus actually it is a priority to, oh, well, we're just not talking about it. So I think it's about the consistency of that and setting realistic targets. We're saying 70% by 2030, and then we'll revise that target again. And part of this is about lobbying hard for that. At the same time, to get on the boat with that, to get on the train, if you like, we need to make sure that pricing and a fair allocation of profitability is distributed correctly throughout the entire supply chain. And that's been a perennial challenge. It means different things to different people, but the upstream control means that the downstream and those producers and growers often have a much tougher challenge to maximize the return. There's currently major shortages in the fresh produce sector.
What are the shortages, Mark?
The harvest that we faced this year, certainly around apple, Bramley. There's been shortages in, believe it or not, in nuts, macadamia nuts, to name but two. Okay. And there is a whole mixed economy out there now about moving prices because of the challenge over the crops. And that's going to have an impact on pricing. Do you think any politician is going to turn around and go, you need to pay more for your food? It's going to stand up and say that. What politician is going to say that? It's unlikely. Mm-hmm. As a country, our food is relatively cheap.
It's incredibly cheap when you think of the work that goes into it. And also, our farmers have been battling with weather. I mean, well, I get a weekly veg box, for example, have done for 25 years. And I get spinach in it most weeks. And of course, there was so much rain, the spinach was just destroyed. So often there'll be a little note saying, we're really sorry, there's no spinach. I mean, we are getting adverse weather, aren't we?
We are. And it has had an impact in cropping this year, for sure. Yeah. And some of the clients that I deal with in my day job have faced some really significant challenges. Equally, some years it's the land of plenty and the crops are absolutely fantastic. So you have to bear everything in context, obviously, but nonetheless, we're going to be going into a crop shortage year, definitely in particular areas of fresh produce. Now, the way in which that is argued, yes, our food is incredibly cheap. And it's part of that discussion, I think, which is why our two priorities are so interlinked, needs to be had. And yes, it will be a brave politician, but politicians are, I think, rising up, waking up to that fact. Because if we want food self-sufficiency and we want a profitable British agriculture, food and farming industry, as important as the way we talk about automotive, which is largely owned by foreign investment companies and foreign manufacturers, we still have an automotive industry in this country, but it's owned by, obviously, international organisations predominantly.
We've lost our Ford Cortinas, or what was it we used to have, the Capri and things.
A lot of it's still manufactured here in the UK, but it's owned by international companies. Yeah. Volvo is owned by Geely. Rolls-Royce is owned by BMW. You know, they're invariably owned by international companies.
I find it incredibly hard when I bought some cushions the other day for the garden, sort of outdoor-y hammock ones. And I was, you know, didn't really look where they were made from. And I regret it because they were made in China. And I was quite shocked. I've sent some things back that I thought were made in the UK because of the branding. And they weren't. They were made in China. And I, you know, I think it's up to the public as well to look at where their food comes from. You know, when you're in the supermarket, buy British, you know, because sometimes you have to search, don't you? English bacon, for example, it's Danish, and you know, you have to search for the British.
There's been a huge piece about provenance, and supermarket advertising and branding is all been about locally sourced. There is a disconnect perhaps with the ultimate grower. Only when it's very targeted, particularly in manufactured products, will there be a linkage to the source ingredients. And not related to the Rural Policy Group, but related to my other day jobs, we've been trying to push and trying to support clients with getting that message across, because it will support supply and it ultimately will support demand, which means they can sell more and make effectively more profit to then reinvest in their businesses.
Yeah.
And I guess as this doesn't sit it interlinks within my day job, I suppose, but it also sits separately. The people that are on the council voluntarily are as passionate about this as I am, because within the report that's being launched on the 16th, which is effectively 6 months worth of rural policy group events. And those events are between an hour and a half, and they always involve politicians, leaders from industry. And we have a third of speeches and then two thirds of debate and discussion. And our most recent one, which was actually around electric and hydrogen impact on agri-food and farming and food tech, was bonkers, because people are waking up to the fact that that's actually going to have an impact on their performance, their ability to produce. And then ultimately, when it goes up or down the supply chain, what does that mean in terms of pricing? And the standard response is, you've got to be more efficient. But there's only so far you can go. And then that ties in the point about workforce. So within the report, all of this is in there, but the outcomes of the report, there is a series of recommendations, and two of which I'm just going to quickly phone in on. One is about the development and the profile of what the opportunities are for the sector. Now, this has been rehearsed over my tenure in education, that we need to make people more aware. And there's been so many different attempts to mix performance. But if someone owns it and commercializes it and actually makes it beneficial for the businesses as well as the potential applicants and they truly understand what the opportunities are, I think we can actually build a workforce more sustainably, because we need to have a more sustained workforce. Otherwise, we're always going to face these shortages. We need to think differently. And the other side of it is more of a PR piece, which is about, do the British public and do the consumer truly understand the role and value of the agri, food and farming industry in this country and how much it is truly worth? Because when you talk about, it's huge. And when you talk about business and industry, that's the other point I'm going. When you talk about business and industry, people will talk about construction. They will talk about engineering. They will talk about the financial services sector. In Kent and the southeast, we'll talk about transport and logistics and the ports. Agriculture, food and farming doesn't often get the profile and look in it should.
And yet we eat constantly, every day.
And everybody needs to eat.
Exactly.
And where does it come from? You know, you don't get strawberry milk from a strawberry milk tree or a strawberry milk cow. It is produced and manufactured,
It was interesting to see the shortages that Nando's have had recently with their chicken and their piri piri, and also McDonald's with their shakes. And when I saw this, I kind of squawked on my Twitter, which is at Jules Serkin. And I just said, when I drive past McDonald's at 8 a.m. and I see the queues of people sitting in their cars waiting for a breakfast for perhaps 15 minutes sitting in a car drive through, I have boiled my little egg or grilled a bit of bacon while I'm putting my mascara on to go to work, made a coffee, taken it in a flask, a coffee brought from a Kentish company. We've got so far removed from what we eat. And the taste of a Kentish strawberry or a Scottish berry compared with something that's brought in from Morocco or Spain is just, the difference is so different, isn't it?
It is. And I was we owned and oversaw, produced in Kent for a decade and transformed it and built it up into.
That's where I know you from as well.
That's where you also know me from as well. I've done a lot of things over my tenure. And we transformed, produced in Kent with Kent County Council, who have been a huge supporter of this agenda. And they became a strong representative voice for the producer. And one of the things that we did was we put on some of the big manufacturers on there, like Kent Frozen Foods, because it wasn't just about the small artisan producer, much bigger producer. So when you think about food and supply chain, you're right in terms of British, but also, again, it is the, to use a term a colleague of mine uses, it is the horsepower that is being allocated to this as a priority. And that's not a negative or disparaging remark to the present administration in Whitehall, or indeed the opposition's views, both of which we have on talks and we debate this. It is actually, where does agriculture, food and farming sit on the cabinet table? And it sits down the bottom end. And yeah, one of the pieces around what RPG is about, when you talk about soundbite, we want to move agriculture and rural up the cabinet table.
To the top.
Should be sitting there right next to, you know, you've got your chancellor, you've got your foreign secretary, you've got the home secretary. Why isn't agriculture, food and farming and rural there? Now, you've got some fabulous organisations like the NFU and the CLA who champion their respective causes, but this is different. This is very honed, very much focusing specifically around food and fair value and distribution. And we narrowed it down into such a way, underpinned by sustainable finance, we narrowed it down into such a way to enable us to focus. If you're too broad, it doesn't work. And there are so many rural groups floating around.
Yeah, of course.
Many of which are just talking shops. I've sat on many of them over my time, and many of them don't have an impact. So people often say to me, so, well, what was the impact? And say, well, okay, let's analyze it. Since RPG kind of kicked off in 19, we've delivered, I think, something like 25 events. We've had well over 1,000 businesses on those calls. We've engaged with both sides of the house in Westminster. We've had some of the leaders of relevant industry, from British Vault through to the Bank of England, through to, MHA McIntyre Hudson, the Institute of Directors, the CBI, at top level, absolutely, yeah, director general level of these institutions. And out of that have come a series of two reports. This is the second one, a series of recommendations, of which we are now implementing and will have an effect. And if we can impact and get things moved up the cabinet table, then that is also a win. And also, it's about raising that profile. Just by generating this report is raising the profile of the rural sector. And you haven't seen anything yet. We've also developed a repository for information and data. People can download the events. The talks are extremely intuitive. I think we had the government's chief advisor for electric and agriculture on there the other week. So, you know, we get a hell of a penetration. And I re-emphasize what I said before. It's not the day job. And a number of different organizations have picked up on what we are doing, want to tie in. That was my mobile telephone.
It was lovely. You're so much in demand, Mark.
What can I say, Jules?
Just to go back to your talks and your events, for those that are interested to have a look at the Rural Policy Group, you can go to www.ruralpolicygroup.com. Can anyone join or support?
Yeah. So basically, you can register as a member. It's free. We're actively encouraging people to do that. And what that will do is we'll give you more access to advance warning of events, some additional collateral and reporting that's being developed. Or you can just simply go on the website and download the information as you wish.
Yeah.
We want people to get behind it, and we want people to, if you like, get on the truck, because it's only as good as the value of it. There are two things that matter to business when you break it all down. And I was in a senior management team meeting yesterday having this conversation. It is how much and who is doing it. When you break it down to bare bones, and I've given speeches on this over my time, because everything gets drilled into that. So therefore, this, for people to engage, has to be valuable. And for it to be valuable, it has to have discernible outcomes and things that will impact on those two things. Who's doing it and how much? The recommendations that we have driven, which come out of the talks, all of it comes from the talks.
Yeah.
We distill, we issue a kind of policy bulletin after every event, and then those bulletins are consolidated into a report. The report, we've done two. So we were doing two a year. They will now move to an annual report simply because it'll be more effective, which will always outline how far we've achieved on the previous recommendations with the new recommendations. So it is a rolling process. And I would urge, as we move back into normality, inverted commas, I would urge business, agri, food, farming, associated businesses, businesses that are based in the rural sector, rural geography. You just mentioned the piece around agricultural land being passed out, being put over to
developers or solar.
Kent is 85% designated rural in its classification of its geography. We don't necessarily talk enough about that. We talk about, you know, the Q on the M20 or the M2 and, yeah, you know, the emissions and the impact of that. We don't talk about those other matters. And it does affect a lot of people. Equally, this is about business. This is not about people just, they can find out if they want, but this is about business impact and supporting businesses in Kent and in the Southeast. And ultimately, the Rural Policy Group is a national project, but it's based in Kent. So, you know, the policy group has been looking at other counties, have been working closely with colleagues in Lincolnshire and obviously in Norfolk and Suffolk, because they are also key agricultural heartlands, if you like, production areas. So we are branching as a national institution, but again, we're keeping it simple and keeping it really, really focused, because otherwise it means many things to different people, and people don't then understand what our messaging is all about. Hence why on the 16th, this launch of the policy document is really important.
Yeah, so that's the 16th. What time is it?
So it's the 16th. It's at 10:30. It will be...
in the morning, I take.
Friday, I suppose.
I know you work hard, but that's ridiculous.
I can only handle, you know, 40 or 50 things at once at any given time. And only 80 hours a week. Something's never changed.
Yeah. I mean, I noticed that I was reading that I think it was Waitrose have just upped what they're paying their delivery drivers. And it was, I can't remember off the top of my head, but you may have read it. It was equivalent to, you know, a proper salary with perks and all sorts. So, you know, maybe the fact that our delivery drivers are going to start being valued as well. I noticed you mentioned in this little chat, boat, train and truck. So let's keep that going.
Well, one of my hobby horses is, you know, let's keep on trucking. Let's get on the truck.
Yeah.
When
as long as you don't have to go through the Dartford Tunnel, that's
yeah. Or when you're giving motivational speeches, you know, you talk about, well, you know, we're all on a train. You can get off at a station, but if perhaps you're not kind of performing on the train or doing everything that everybody else is doing, we might chuck you off. You know, so and so. Just coming back to the 16th. So we have it's going to be streamed live. It's actually going to be hosted in London with a massive panel of people, including Dr. Roger Barker from the IOD, Sarah Hendry, who's the Director General of the CLA, Rob King, who was the Head of Sustainability for HSBC, Rakesh Shornack, the Chairman of MHA McIntyre Hudson and the Managing Partner, and Teresa Wickham, who is President of the Marden Fruit Society and BBC Broadcaster. Brilliant. And headlined by Richard Francis Needham, Sir Richard, who is was a Member of Parliament to 97 and is heavily involved in agri-food and farming.
So you've got some brilliant movers and shakers there who are all passionate on this rural policy and sustainability. You can find them, as I said, if you want to find out more about their work, theruralpolicygroup.com. And you've been listening to me, Jules Serkin, on the Business Bunker Extra Show. And my fabulous guest was Mark Lumsden-Taylor. Do check them out. Go on to the website and find out more. And bring up your kids and just tell them, you know, eat in season. Where is this strawberry from? Where is this asparagus from? You know, have a look. You'll be amazed at the difference in the taste. But from me and from Mark, for now, it's a goodbye.
This is Channel 2. The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.